bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Justin Robert Young.
Well, hello, friends.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hey, everybody, that's me.
Gentlemen, it's 2020 and we live in a new era. So much of what goes on right now is shaped by social media, things like Twitter, Facebook, etc. But those companies are all over, well over a decade old. They form to help us communicate and talk to people in an era when the internet was still kind of sort of new. Same with YouTube. Now we have people who've created audience. You have audiences and followers and stuff that extend beyond any single platform. And sometimes the limitations of those platforms become very apparent. We've talked about deplatforming people who say things that are, you know, politically incorrect or just outright wrong or what have you, or offend a certain group of people. And they get deplatformed, but somebody else who maybe is just as offensive isn't. You deal with the problem of, because there's so much stuff out there, there's the noise and the algorithm trying to sort this stuff. And we've talked about our frustration when Facebook became big and we're like, oh, I'll tell everybody to go follow my Facebook page. And then one day Facebook's page is like, yeah, about that. If you really want to communicate your people now, you got to pay us, which was annoying. YouTube went to an algorithm, but you can go to a timeline format, but YouTube does that. Twitter does that. Twitter encourages people to follow lots of other people, which means maybe somebody signed up to follow, you know, I like this guy on Scam School. I'm going to follow him on Twitter. And now I'm following 500 other people and I don't see what he has to say or what have you in other forms. And so I think that my point is we're getting to a point where it's super, super noisy out there. And so much of our time isn't spent talking to our fans or talking to the people that want to follow us. It's dealing with everybody else on this platform. And Brian, specifically, you deal with this all the time on YouTube and comments.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's maybe time for me to rethink that strategy. I think that, you know, it seems to have worked so far. Everything I've said before about answering comments is when somebody, there's two types of comments. This is nice. Great. Yeah, you're cool. You like me. I like you. There's lazy sass, in which case I usually just respond, you know, tit for tat with their lazy sass holding up a mirror. But then there's people who just lose their mind with rage, in which case, like, okay, this is real energy that if they just understood the context of why I said what I said, could be redirected to convert someone into a super fan. So that tends to be a good investment to bother to respond to anyone. And that worked to get, you know, Scam School in the early days. Like, who is this weirdo with dumb looking hair? Like, great, that's energy. How can we mold that? How can we shape that? How can we direct that and make them part of a tribe? Then with the modern rogue, it's like, who are these idiots? Like, yeah, we're total idiots and I'm glad you're here. This is awesome. But now that we've passed the million subscriber mark, I'm starting to notice different phenomenon. For example, on Friday, we did an episode on popular in hacking circles is getting an RFID chip subcutaneously inserted in your hand. It's basically, think of it as a scratch pad that I think it has, like, you know, four kilobits of data, maybe kilobytes, I don't know, that you can do everything from use your cell phone to program it to go to a web page to, you know, update with your hotel key or whatever. But the point is, this is something that you totally control. It's like walking around with a legal pad in your hand. And there are practical benefits, especially for, like, Deviant Olive was our guide through this, and he's a penetration tester. He used it in order to get back behind the scenes by ostensibly using his guest badge to open a door when really he was using the RFID chip in his hand with stolen guard credentials. And of course, this is all with the permission of the business owners for the purpose of finding exploits in their system. So it seemed fairly uncontroversial to me, but man, oh man, as I look at the comments now, it is, when it first launched, it was 90% this is awesome, and then 10% I don't like this, split into two camps. One camp was the tinfoil hat wearing, well, great, now the government can track you camp, which missed the fact that the government doesn't need a chip to track you. They can track you based on your face and your phone and your accounts and all that stuff. So I'm like, guys, you're running when nobody's chasing you. But then recently the comments have all become like 90% of all the comments on the channel are people quoting Revelations or calling names or whatever. And at this point, it's such a deluge. I honestly don't know what the right answer is or whether it's worth any amount of effort on this. So it could be that this is an artifact of us getting over a certain swell point and it no longer becomes worth it to even look at the comments. Or it could be that we just delete them. I don't have a strong sense. This is a bit of uncharted territory for me.
Go ahead, Bryce.
One thing to kind of set some background is that, like, we have, like, especially back when it was just us doing Scam School, like, we've been also a little cavalier about removing bad comments.
Sure.
Because mostly, if you remove someone's comment, they never get notified that that happened. And unless they go to look for it, even if they go to look for their comment, which people don't do, the YouTube comment system is so bad that they could just easily assume, and most likely just assume, I can't find it. I don't know where it was. I'm not thinking about it ever again. If you use the option to like hide a person so that none of their comments ever show up, they never know that. They are not going to ever see anything that makes it clear that that happened. So it's a little different from like a Twitter block where you see a thing and it's like, this person has blocked you. It's just like you are quietly whisked away.
There's not as
much of a huge explosion as it is on other social media platforms.
It's a bit like using the mute function on Twitter, only you mute them to everyone. Like all of a sudden they're deplatformed and never know it.
Basically.
Yeah. And that's the I think what you guys have realized, and I believe rightly and smartly, is that a comment section is not just a web forum, right? It is not just there as a public utility for people to go back and forth. It is a connected part of the experience. So it is much more like a movie choosing movie reviews to put on their poster than it is necessarily just an open place where anybody can say anything. And so you guys, I think, and what some people have realized, and you guys among them, is that when some stranger comes over here and they are thinking about whether or not they're going to enjoy this product, oftentimes they're reading the comments as the thing is going on. So let's make sure that at the very least, even if they're going to be snarky and sassy, there is some control there. Now, what you have here is something different. So let me ask you this, Brian. Is there room in your social engagement philosophy to understand just breakaway renegade videos? Like, can you just say, you want to know what? This is so unique that it cannot really affect my broader worldview of how to engage on the internet. It's just every once in a while, there's the black swan where we've crossed into a realm that we really don't have any interest in going back and forth on. So we'll just, do whatever we hear.
I think that is the null hypothesis. Is I'm tempted to think, okay, obviously what I've been doing has been working, and this video is an outlier because normally, even the government tinfoil hat people, I could at least, bounce it back to, hey, here's this article that sort of, diffuses some of your worries about it. But all the religious people, I'm like there is no chance that I'm going to make a dent in any of them.
That's on brand for Modern Rogue. Somebody being like, the government's going to track you is at least in the universe that you've created, where you've made videos on like how to destroy your identity and get off the grid, right? Like that is something that you guys have done in the past. So at least that is within the realm. You're speaking that language. The Modern Rogue has not taken a position on theology, let alone the righteousness of Revelations and how seriously we should take it. So there's really no move for you guys other than to say, I guess we are on your radar.
If you all yeah, it's like flat earthers commenting on NASA videos, you know? Like it's like there is nothing to be gained from there.
Uh-oh.
So, hey, look what I found. Someone posted about an hour ago, one of these comments from an hour ago has a YouTube link, which, you know, and it's one of the, you must not accept the microchip as we'll be enslaved, blah, 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 and linked to another YouTube channel, which featured this video in it. Titled Be Prepared for This in 2020 and Be Ready to Just Say No. And
oh, look at that.
They have their own Patreon thing. So this is definitely this is definitely a softly coordinated, directed thing.
So that probably, how many views does that video have?
18,000.
That would certainly explain the influx of this. I'd be curious. I'm going to bet.
And it was posted today.
Yeah. So I'm going to bet that video, which I guess congrats to us. I'm going to guess that video specifically makes a religious argument as opposed to the tinfoil hat argument, which is why all of a sudden all the comments are tilting to religious.
I won't show their thing on screen, but their Patreon reads, content creator on YouTube exposing the synagogue of Satan, the new world order agenda, the Illuminati and globalism due to YouTube demonetization. So, and this is all in caps. So it's like a religious truther sort of guy.
So here's the question. Do we quietly hide all these, or do we just say whatever, kids? Because unlike other stuff, I don't think any of our audience perceives that anybody's making a cogent argument or necessarily. I'm not worried about any of these folks seducing any of our fans into becoming their fans.
Well, let me and throw this out there too, is the idea that for your fans, let them engage and have fun with this because it's content. These people have given you a gift, the gift of controversy and content for a thing where the controversy to any rational person, you didn't do anything controversial. And it's more of a bunch of radical crazies are attacking this, which means that, I don't know, it's kind of like, great, come here. You just look silly. And my fans will have fun commenting on the comments and stuff about this.
Yeah, and
by the way,
definitely an uptick. Definitely a busy day today.
But
so number one, you know, you win for these views, right?
right.
Unlike this guy who is talking about being demonetized, you are very much monetized, and those numbers still count no matter where they come from. The question then becomes, in your social media worldview, do you take the views and minimize the conflict, or do you allow the conflict to play out, or do you exacerbate the conflict?
I think that if we were a smaller channel, if we were earlier in our career, then maybe you exacerbate it, maybe you engage, maybe you see what you can make out of it. But I think in this case, that whole religious aspect, I mean, stop me if you've heard this before. On the Weird Things podcast, we've run across some people who just can't have their minds changed. And this is, I'm going to say, conservative estimate, 100% of them are not in a place to have their minds changed. In which case, whatever. Let the kids run around crazy. Thank you for stopping by and watching.
I have a suggestion, Brian.
Okay. Yes?
A money-making suggestion for you. Ready?
Yeah.
Sell RFID chips with the Constitution. Constitution's 4,500 characters. RFID is 2K, but with compression, you could put the Constitution on it. Remember how Penn and Teller had their little metal plate ones?
God. Yes.
These people would more prefer, I think, the Bible.
It's not for them, Bryce. It's not for them. I thought, okay, the Ten Commandments. I thought, like, no, but go there and say, oh, you don't like the Constitution either?
By the way, probably doesn't help that since getting his chip, Jason has since reprogrammed it so it plays a YouTube video of a Slayer song. I programmed him with Mr. Roboto, I'll have you know. But
for those of you who are listening, the video describes effectively a process that it would be about akin to getting your ears pierced. It is a process that happens in a shed on Brian's property. So it's not exactly anything that requires even, you know, anything that could be considered even minor surgery, right? This is just
same with the chip animals.
Exactly. It is funny though to be on the receiving end of somebody confidently announcing that we're being paid to normalize RFID chip or whatever, like to be told that our boss is the capital T they out there. And it's I don't know. I've never had this close a view of being accused of being part of a cabal, a global international conspiracy.
It's funny. It reminds me a lot of, even when I was in newspapers and people would talk to us about like, oh, we're being controlled. And, you know, at that point, the nomenclature was that we were there for oil money. Right. Because we were a part of the agenda to keep us in the Iraq war. But like it is a funny thing to look out and be like, oh, how did you get there? It's like literally all I'm doing is like I'm interviewing an old woman about her parking ticket. Like Jesus, this escalated quickly.
I like Codes from Holmes comments. SpaceX building rockets in sheds in Texas. Modern Road making cybernetic implants in Texas in sheds. Texas man, it's a place.
Not damn right.
to give you an idea of some of the other channels that these people or some of the other videos that these people watch. Here's one entitled Brain Cells in America Are at an All-Time Low. Here's a big storm is coming and you are about to be blamed for it. Super Bowl 54 or halftime show Illuminati exposed.
That's some good company. That
did way. I really just see this on The Price is Right, and it's a screenshot of a guy in a bodysuit. And he's bid $666 for whatever the I'm assuming washing machine was. So
all right, I'm getting better and better feelings about the company that we're in.
Oh yeah, I mean look, without a doubt, this is a validation for the Modern Rogue brand. The Modern Rogue brand is looked at as something that is polished enough to attack on the level of broadcast television. This is the kind of stuff that winds up, I mean, look, it's got an audience. It is a conspiratorial religious audience. There is obviously an element of your brand that does embrace conspiratorial thinking, at least as it results to kind of critical thinking and adventurism.
Sure. And prepperism and survivalism. And I mean, there's some overlap in those communities.
But this is obviously, this is a flavor for which you are, I don't know exactly how much of a benefit there is to you even engaging. I mean, my gut instinct would be, you know, leave, if there's like a thread of people going back and forth, then maybe you leave that. But by and large, I don't think wholesale deleting of these comments is a negative thing. I think that there's, you get to control the experience of people, especially if you're in a world where these views are possibly bringing this video increased visibility
right, by
way of the algorithm, then you controlling where that goes is in your benefit. And if you don't see an upside to this turning into a battle over scripture or your audience yelling at a crowd that obviously is just not having anywhere near the same conversation that you guys are, then, you know, like I'm like, look, let's talk about whether or not the government can track you. Cool. Let's talk about that. That plugs into our universe, whether or not Revelations is real or we're being funded by the Illuminati, is, I don't know. I mean, I guess I could see a world where you're like, no, let's have a conversation about the Illuminati.
Well, that world exists in a world where I have free time, and we don't live in that world. So I will not be having that conversation. And so really, it's more of a policy decision. The question is, do we dedicate team resources to pressing hide or delete or whatever, like even if it's just three comments, that's some amount invested in it. For right now, as right now it's a Winchester situation, and then we'll check in tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, we already spend a certain amount of time looking at these things anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, I'm looking at this more and more on this channel that is posted about you, and there's no talking to them, certainly, and I don't think you're ever going to win these people over.
No, and I think as far as everybody knows it's a much noisier environment. Everything knows now, like your fans know what they're there for and whatnot. And I think better spent serving them. I do think you should all consider adding the Illuminati level to your Patreons, just to say that, you know, and
$6.66
still have not been bought by the Illuminati.
We should set it up where it's just like one of one, like it says, it just says like some $1 million an episode if you're the Illuminati, and then just show it as occupied by a dummy account.
It's like the one they did with like the warrants for, like, you know, the companies that say we so far haven't been served by one of these warrants to like divulge our information, the canary thing, you know, because you're not allowed to divulge, but you can say we can no longer say that we haven't been served one of these.
Oh, that's funny. Like,
if we have one of one available, we haven't bought out yet.
That's funny. It does on the algorithm or the analytics page specifically say, great news, last week your videos got more views from recommendations. So that I think that that's exactly right, that this
that these
is
people
a
looked
hot
you
bed.
Up
well They are in the middle of a rabbit hole, and we titled it very simply, getting an RFID implant. So like yeah, man, tell me how that's bad. And then they're like, what?
Yeah, I mean, RFID implants are something that I have seen triggers a certain element of the religious community for a while, right? So it does not surprise me. When Brian first brought this up in the pre-show, my initial thing was, you got linked somewhere where this is a thing. And I think now that we've found the source, that's confirmed. But again, it's about where this is. But I mean, look, if part of it is like, hey, this one got swamped, it also got a lot of views, we'll just leave that there. At some point, maybe we look to go back if we got free time to clean it up. But that definitely is a different realm of conversation than the modern rogue is kind of used to getting.
Yeah. Bryce, you just pointed out that there's a comment saying they filter their comments.
Yeah. Which is another thing that we could do, right? Is people don't use this much, but there's an option on YouTube, like, accept, like, take comments but only show the ones that we approve, which would be like, you would still let people do the work of putting in a comment, but I think it may not show up until someone clicks a check mark next to it. I think that would be even more work.
Really, really like the metaphor that Justin made about quotes on a movie poster. That is a really cogent, simple way to think of it.
So I want an update from Bryce in your video game newsletter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, let me pull up the MailChimp and see what the what the response rate was.
While you do that, I received the first issue and I read it. I very much liked the way you laid things out. I liked the way you broke it down. I liked the way these digestible little bits. Here's my thing on this. Here's my talking about that. I enjoyed that. I really liked that and was very excited. I'm like, yay, it came. Yay, everybody. I was clapping, you know. Pull up your data, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on where this is so far.
Yeah, let me get my two-factor logged in. I think you mentioned this, Brian, last time that that MailChimp will say, "Hey, you should resend this." It gave me that a couple, like a day or two after I sent it out.
And did you do so?
I did do that.
To my astonishment, usually that second resend gets almost as many people as the first send. And virtually no unsubscribes, because most likely they didn't see the first time, and when they see it the second time, they're like, this is that thing that I signed up for.
Yeah. Okay. Explore MailChimp audience. Here we go. Let's see. That campaign, which was the first email, the one that was not resent, the initial launch had 68.1% opens, an 8.5% click rate. Now, I didn't really have any. I linked out to a few things that I was on, but it wasn't really like, please go click this button, please go do a thing for me. The resend, which was sent to 19 people, which is a little under half, had a 22% open rate, zero clicks.
Those are the people who have the coronavirus.
So
by the way, where can I go to sign up? I forgot to get that last
time. Neshcom.com, NESHCOM.com. There's a link that says games newsletter on top of it. But yeah, it was the thing that I bumped into was, so we were talking about release, how often it should release. And I think the thing I was bumping into as I was putting it all together was it felt long for kind of what I thought I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. It felt like this is a lot of, I think I ended up here having 5 bullet points on what would be in it, 2 impressions things, 2 news things, and then 2 sort of goofier little things. I kind of thought that because I'd been letting it pool for a little while before I sent the first one, that I'd like to get them even smaller and have it be like about 2 times a week. But yeah, I don't know. But you said you enjoyed the way that it was structured, Andrew.
Yeah, I thought it visually was pleasing. I knew you did a good thing at the top. You organized the top to tell us what was there. You know, so I thought that was, it looked like there was time and care put into it. I think you graphics. I think that I don't think you have to drive yourself too much crazy if you're at a point where like, oh, I don't have a graphic header for this. I don't think you need to be afraid of just doing like just a regular text thing header, but the way it was laid out, I really liked that.
Yeah.
And you know, I liked how you did, like, you know, when I got to the bottom where you're breaking down that, you know, kind of like with like the background, the what's new, what does it accomplish stuff. I liked you breaking that stuff down. And I think just, you know, it's going to be, you know, playing with, you know, from a formatting point of view, playing with the formatting, as you pointed out, the idea if you did it bi-weekly or more often, then they'll be shorter. One technical thing I think you could look into is, you know, you can do in email anchor links so that you could actually click on the thing and jump down to that part of the message.
Oh yeah. I did see that they have anchor stuff, and I was at the point where it was kind of in the evening, and I thought if I spend another hour on it, but yeah, that's a good point, especially if I'm going to keep doing a table of contents tile top. Well,
and that's the other thing you just addressed too, is like, that's the thing is I'm curious to see like your workflow and how can you. I drop off so many projects because the idea is there, the content is there, but the workflow gets to be so tedious. Mm-hmm. And what you're doing to mitigate that.
Yeah, I did end up, I think we talked, maybe it was off the stream or maybe it was during last week's episode about graphics. I ended up making these little banner headers in Photoshop, which I think is fine. I think at the end of the day, it's going to be something where I have to finish this on a PC. I was just thinking in my head, what is there a way that I could workflow this where if I did everything on my mobile phone, could I get all parts of it done? And I think
do that in Spark.
We did talk about Spark a little bit, but I'm still getting my feet wet with Spark, and
no worries.
Didn't get a chance to check out Canva like you recommended last week.
Yeah.
Equally, I could make a template in Photoshop, and then that becomes a very simple thing. But I think it's I feel good about it, and I feel like I can keep going at this.
Good. That's gonna be the critical thing, because I think that, you know, it's a thing that you've been passionate for, and as long as we've done this podcast, you've always had interesting things to talk about every week about video games and stuff. And, you know, that content, I think, is there. So excited to see where this goes.
Thank you.
So,
hey, by the way, what did you think of Word Tower or Spell Tower?
Spell Tower Plus is great.
Yeah. What's new about it from the old one?
It is a remake of it.
Oh, it's called Letter Tower in this iteration.
It was originally called. Oh, did I? Oh, S word. I think it's called Spell Tower. I typed it wrong. In the graphic.
Letter words.
It is.
Fail.
No,
it's a learning process.
It's a learning process. Spell Tower Plus. No, they basically remade Spell Tower into Spell Tower Plus so that it works on, you know, high res phones and modern phones, and it's got like 11 different game modes.
Man, I just realized Callie's gonna love it. She'd do well with that.
Yeah. I think actually the most I mentioned this in the email neshcom.com that there are too many game modes. There are too many, and I open up Spell Tower and I go, I don't know what I want to play, and so I'm not going to play any of these. Thank you. But it's pretty cool. It's a good traditional word finding puzzle game, action puzzle game.
Yeah. Picture Tetris meets a crossword or word finder.
Everyone in the chat is now saying that they're unsubscribing.
People are like, they're quoting Revelations right now. And low towers shall become letters, and spelling shall be sky.
He would misspell it with his left hand, the hand of the devil.
While I have everybody here, I want to ask a question. And I know you guys had a conversation about this prior when I was gone. I want the follow-up. The Byte app for video. Where are we now? Anybody using it? Anything going on in that world?
I think that's another Winchester situation where we're waiting to hear back.
I'll tell you what. I did download Byte about the time that we talked about it. And I haven't used it. It has gotten me to use TikTok more.
Wow.
Because
meanwhile, TikTok has gotten you to use TikTok less because it keeps shouting at you to go to bed.
I'm an adult man. I can browse TikTok at midnight. I don't know. Every time I open up Byte, this is the same problem. I think we talked about it 2 weeks ago, is that when you start up on Byte, it only auto follows you to the Byte account, the main official Byte account. And if you don't know, Byte is basically Vine 2.0. And that means that every time I would log in, I would just see the same stuff over and over again because it doesn't have a following thing. And then I would go to like, oh, what are the most popular Bytes? And it would all be just like hokey sketch stuff that I wasn't any of the stuff that I liked on Vine. And then I just go back to TikTok because that's where people are doing the stuff I like on TikTok, which is just high schoolers getting high and, I don't know, knocking down signs and stuff.
Yeah, when I first heard they were coming back, the relaunch, I'm like, well, I'm glad that hopefully they'll learn the lesson, lifted the 6 second limit, nope. You know? And I'm like, well, maybe the role is different now and people, but like, I think in a world with Instagram, Snapchat, and TikTok, it's just a much more crowded place.
It is, and TikTok has elevated its art form so far beyond where the Vine. You can see the Vine influence, but it's like there's stuff that's on TikTok that just filters out to Twitter because it's so compelling. That is just so far beyond where Vine kind of like first tread. Like the there's like just laugh out loud stuff that is like super high effort. There's really, really, really funny low effort stuff, like and the community on TikTok is just so active, and part of it is because there's that recommendation thing. Like you everybody is trying to do their best to make broadcast television effectively, and that just creates such a different level of energy, and it shows.
Have you used Byte, Andrew? You brought it up, but had you actually gotten a chance to use it yet?
No, I don't even have TikTok. I mean, I'm like passive watch this thing sort of go on kind of thing, and you know, like looking on the App Store, it's number 89 in, you know, social media apps or social networking, which is not for as much attention as it had, it kind of shows that there's not been, it's 3,000 reviews, which shows that like there's not been a lot of momentum for it.
For Byte?
So, for Byte. Yeah. But You know, which it leads to the other question is, like, we're seeing the world out now for Quibi for their, this is professionally produced short form content.
Oh, Quibi. Oh.
And
for a quick bite.
Yeah.
That means less than 10 minutes.
Yeah. As I don't know if we talked about it on this show, but a bit prescient that all five of the ads to introduce Quibi to the masses involve people about to get killed in a big ass way. And they have a scant few seconds before total disaster befalls them, at which point they have one thought, Quibi.
Yeah. My favorite comment on Quibi so far is because Quibi stands for quick bites, then Hulu stands for huge lunch. is it too early to set an over under on when this totally explodes?
Well, we've already
Hindenburg-esque disaster.
We've talked a lot about it on Cord Killers. The thing that will keep Quibi going at least for 12 months is how many I'm going to put question marks around the word AstroTurf, but AstroTurf accounts that are already, that will get Quibi day one, right?
Oh, really?
All the, it was either T-Mobile or Verizon that's giving people Quibi account. Like, there will be enough free accounts going around that the service will exist. And they, because they, the first year they're just going to talk about user numbers and not money, because
which
have
we saw
and not money
with Vessel. This is a carbon copy of Vessel. Vessel gave a free year of Vessel to everyone, and with one thing. First of all, if you don't remember, what Vessel did was they paid all the money in the world to all of the top YouTube channels to intentionally hold back all of their content 7 days and allow them to play early on Vessel, which was really convenient if you had, timely news commentary or a weekly giveaway or something like that. Compliance was a problem. There were some people that signed up for the free 1 year of Vessel, and then they're like, would you pay for it? And then the world was loudly said no. And then they lost, what was it, $170 million or something?
Something like that.
It was ridiculous.
Verizon then bought it and shut it down because they also had Go 90, which is also, I think, not a thing anymore.
Yeah. Vessel, of course, stood for Very Stossel.
The government says your lunch can only be more than 10 minutes. So I think Quibi will be a rat. There's so much money in Quibi that it can be a flop and can still eke out for a
Christmas
year.
Christmas, you're banging the over on Christmas.
Ooh, but longer than Christmas? Yes, I would say yes, longer than Christmas.
Yeah, I'll say the over on that because
somebody will buy it, right? Like, if even just to restitch together, there's a lot of content on there with a lot of names.
There's so much too big to fail in this, both on the creator side, because they did attract some big names, but also, more importantly, from the unfathomable amount of money people are committing for all of this.
Right. I mean, they've already sold. They keep selling ad inventory and ad slots, but nobody's watched anything yet.
They got $1 billion in funding. When you hear a startup or somebody else has sold ad inventory, every major company has a certain amount of their experimental budget. And we've talked about that's like one of the things that happened with Snapchat. Snapchat sold a bunch of ads and they went to do their IPO, like, look what we're doing. And like, that was the experimental budget. And then once there wasn't a return on it, they had a decline in that revenue because companies like, no, we paid you $30 million and we didn't sell four, Toyotas, And so Quibi will get all that, experiment. There'll be the experimental budget, but as far as will it, I mean, $1 billion is a lot of run rate, but I thinking like if we were seeing 10-minute episodic stuff work on YouTube, I'd be like, great, like for big, huge, super produced stuff.
I mean, yes to everything except for super produced. It's almost as though people take a successful thing and just say, but what if there was more chrome on it?
Right.
Then it would say, and we put it behind a paywall, so nobody could even see it.
Because 10 minutes is, I think you're right, Andrew, in like 10 minutes is what YouTube creators, there's folk, lore, and a long time has been talked about doing 10-minute videos for various reasons.
Well, and to be honest, because, and it's not the creator's fault, it's the audience's fault, because the algorithm says, look, all y'all people seem to like 10-minute videos, and so when I hand you a 20-minute video, you don't watch it because you say, ooh, that's long, I'll get back to that later, and then you never do. And if I hand it to you too short, you're like, that wasn't tasty enough. But if it's 9 minutes and 38 seconds, you tend to watch all of it. And then, so that's what the thing serves up. And so the creators tend to try to get close to that 10-minute mark.
Well,
so,
and historically, there have been plenty of other different ideologies behind 10 minutes. But no one's been doing digital.
Well, nobody's been hiring Kiefer Sutherland and Idris Elba and these other people and paying $7 million for night. Like the rate is like, the starting rate's like $7 million per 90 minutes of content or something like that. And that's not even starting what they're paying for Kiefer Sutherland and all that. I mean, they're spending hundreds of millions. We haven't seen that big of a content play on direct to YouTube stuff. And I'm just, yeah, I guess that's my thing. Is like, I don't, like we point out, like, will that, yeah, like, what's the right length? What is it? And I think it's YouTube's become this a delivery channel for all kinds of content of all lengths, but I don't know. I mean, it would be wonderful if it worked. It'd be wonderful if it worked.
I mean, aside from me being going to be really embarrassed about all these Queeby jokes I've been making for the last year and a half, yes, sure, it would be great if there was another place that was spending all this money and creators were able to get more of their vision out there. That being said, I think there's even a question of whether or not building your own walled garden is the smartest media play these days. You know, the marketplace seems to have stabilized. And there are more and more people even who have successfully created their own marketplaces that are looking to now sell some of their content back, you know, like FX just made the big deal with Hulu. Like,
I guess that's the thing you have to look at it. They want this to be the next Netflix or the next Disney Plus. That is what they're trying to build, is they're trying to build a mini Netflix, which just means you need to have that environment.
I understand. I guess my question is, I don't know whether or not that is even where some of the smart money's going, but we're going to find out.
Yeah, I don't know. I had a deal at some point I'll be able to talk more about with a studio we mentioned within the last hour, you know, where they wanted to take one of my books and serialize it into this, you know, these 10-minute sort of chunks. And it was I brought up the question of like, because like, oh, and then we could repurpose it. Like QB says, we want to repurpose it. It could be a feature-length movie afterwards. I'm like, I don't, I like, on paper, that sounds great. In reality, it sounds like you're going to have a lot of movies. They're going to have really awkward pacing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I think Hulu, I wonder about that, because Hulu also does, Hulu is all paid now. So you can't, there's no free content on Hulu, but they still have to format those TV shows and movies, even the originals that they do, to have ad breaks in them. And Hulu more or less seems to have figured that out. If you're a creator of a Queeby show and you know that they want it in 10-minute chunks, and you know that you have a legitimate, you know, avenue to make a feature length version of whatever this thing is, you will keep in mind the ways that you would cut it and shoot it and edit it, so that you could go back after the fact and piece it together as a feature-length thing.
Yeah, but maybe, but assuming that there's the financial, I don't know. I don't, a lot of just questions, I guess, in my head, you know, because it's like you're going to have a lot of content that was created along this format. And, but yeah, $1 billion, you know. And I had a friend of mine he had Meg Whitman. He was on a conference call with them because they wanted to acquire one of his properties. And he had no idea who she was. It was so funny. I talked to somebody named Meg, Meg Whitman, like, you know, eBay, like former, like, you know, presidential candidate and, you know, wanted to be governor of California. You know, it's like, oh, I didn't know. I'm like, oh, wow. Katzenberg. But yeah,
They got a lot of executive talent. They've got a lot of money. Yep. Everything else, you know, smart aleck, dingleberries like me, you know, can laugh and joke about it. But the rubber's gonna meet the road, and we're gonna find out exactly how much people have an appetite to get in on this past the paywall.
I will say, so I mentioned earlier that I've been in browsing TikTok a bit the past back. I'm back on the talk yeah. saddle.
Big talk.
I find myself maybe once a day where I'm on the couch and I'm watching something on TV and I see the TikTok app on my phone. I've got my phone open and I see the app and I will just pause what I'm watching on the TV to scroll through TikTok, and I'll keep having to hit the button on my remote so the Apple TV doesn't go to sleep, but I'm not done browsing through TikTok yet. I think if they can hook in somehow to that addictive nature of short form content and, you know, short session binging, I think there's something there. I don't think it's nothing.
I mean, look,
it's not nothing, guys. It's not,
it's all about the content.
Yeah.
You know, if the content is something that is not hampered by or hopefully enhanced by the formatting restrictions, then it will succeed. TikTok succeeds because it's got an endless flow of people who want that corner, right? And then they had Musical.ly and they had all these other places that were trying to do similar things, and it wound up converging into this kind of supernova, and their technology made that better and easier. It made videos sound better. It made videos look better. It made you able to join a trend a lot easier. These were technology aiding the content. I don't know if Quibi's format does. My hunch would be it doesn't. And I can understand them paying a lot of big money people big money to do some big money content.
You know what the deal would be? I think I know what the killer app for a Quibi or a Quibi like service would be. Are you guys ready for this?
What's that?
Hook into one of these content mills like Viral Hog or America's Funniest Home Videos, which is doing bangers is doing well on
bangers and mash.
Doing bangers and mash, Gov, on social media, including TikTok. Like, there's just AFV will just, like, even Barstool Sports just posts, like, not even sports videos, but just prank videos or fail videos. If you just stitch that together in a five, 10 minute thing, I think it's going to be a big draw for people, honestly.
But they're the scale they're trying to go for, like I said, they're trying to build a Netflix level brand, and not an aggregator, but like a source of like an entirely new level of content you can't get anywhere. That they want you to go there and go like, I can't. They're doing The Fugitive. They have the rights to The Fugitive. They're doing The Fugitive as a series. Like, the rights acquisitions on this is insane. And so they're trying to do a $1 billion play and not a mere $10 million play like your popper idea, Bryce. because people said, is this any different than, you know, podcasters where they hired the celebrities? Yes and no. It's the idea of let's get the people you know onto the platform. It's different that the scale. They're spending tens of millions on content, on shows and stuff that we've never seen that before. And for a format that we've never, I'm like, you know, I just sort of wonder, like, would they have been better off just saying, we're just going to launch a new streaming service of all original content or something? But would that have made enough noise?
I mean, I know I would be more interested in it if it was just because the names are exciting to me. I like a lot of the names and the people that they have signed on. And if they promised a more mobile focused or friendly experience, and maybe they had guidelines or you could chop it up into pieces if you wanted, but you were able to watch it on your television, then like, I think I would be more interested in it. But they believe that the format is going to be part of the charm.
Let me read you the first two paragraphs in the Verge article. Jeffrey Katzenberg insists that his new video streaming service, Quibi, isn't competing against Netflix, Disney Plus, HBO Max, Peacock, or any other of the streaming services that have launched or launching soon. You've got it all wrong. You're not even asking the right questions. Quote, "We don't think we're in the streaming wars," Katzenberg, the former boss of Walt Disney Studios and founder of DreamWorks, tells The Verge in a closed-door meeting the day before the company's grand reveal at a CES keynote. "They're all battling for this," he says as he thrusts his arm towards a TV in the room. "We're going for this," he says, gesturing towards his phone. "Don't tell them." So, and I'm like, I think I know an awful lot of people that watch those things on their phones. You know,
yeah, like, I was going to say, you know, I don't know what, I think there's a lot of teens that are watching Stranger Things or To All the Boys I Loved Before, The Mandalorian on their phones.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's a thing that happens for a lot of people. But you want to know what? I'm not. Look, I didn't start DreamWorks. I didn't run eBay. These are
Hold on. Let me look. S. Spielberg, Katzenberg, Jess. Yeah, there's no Young in there. Go ahead.
Yeah. Right. So, look, I'd be thrilled if I were just one of those cool kids, menacingly putting on my slap bracelet, making fun of the nerd that winds up becoming, you know, the prom king. But boy, howdy, does this look like a flaming disaster in progress?
Yeah, like they're $8 for ad free. Like, all right.
If I'm going to judge it by, I was on Netflix when it was DVD by mail, right? Mm-hmm. Love Netflix because it was a better version of Blockbuster, and it had this cool little like cultural coup of like, oh, what's on your Netflix queue? I'm going to add this thing to my Netflix queue. Then it was streaming, loved it, totally on board with it. Hulu, it took shows being exclusive on Hulu for me to sign up. I needed to have a reason to part with my money because of shows that were exclusive to Hulu for me to go for it. Disney Plus, I knew I was going to get it at the moment that they mentioned it, right?
All like, right, so
it's going to be a slam dunk. I have zero reason why I want Quibi.
Let me read you this line from here, okay? There's a lot of money spent, blah, 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 brings up Mandalorian, but that doesn't worry Katzenberg and Whitman. What have we learned from The Mandalorian? Asked Katzenberg. And man, I respect this guy immensely, and I wish I was as fraction as smart, as charismatic as he is. Let me just preface that by saying it. Anyhow, what have we learned from The Mandalorian? Asked Katzenberg. He's in front of a room full of people. We learned a big hit TV show attracts a lot of business. He cracks up the room. It's true. It's obvious. He joins the rest of us in chuckling, adding, sorry, I've been doing this. I get to say this. I've been doing this before you're all effing born. All right. Yeah.
That's not an answer. That's not an answer. Yeah.
And it was like, why did we, you know, it's not just a big TV show. It was a big TV show. Yes, that iconic Star Wars poster. There was a tremendous amount of momentum in this multi-billion dollar brand that we wanted something good from.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I'm like, I look at the QB homepage and I'm not like going, ooh, I'm going to watch this. I want to watch that. I'm like, all right. Like,
here's what I'm going to say about Quibi. Looks very crackly.
Mm.
Yes.
Very crackly to me. Because Crackle had stuff that I like. Mm-hmm. Crackle had like, I think it was like a Snatch TV show or something. Right. Like it had like adaptations that I would otherwise be interested. It's like one of those things where it's like you see a really awesome commercial and then it's like on Stars and you're like, well, I guess maybe at some point if I get Stars, then I'll watch it. But mm-hmm. like, you know, it's not for me, Jack. I don't know. It just looks like there's a lot of talent on there. But the biggest thing about Quibi that I'm excited about is that there are creators that I like that have secured the bag. I'm very thrilled that very smart man, Jeff Katzenberg, has given a lot of money to people that whose work I enjoy, and at some point, maybe I'll see it in very quick bites.
Yeah, I guess, and that's my kind of issue. Is like Disney Plus, they knew how to launch that because all they had, like, one of the things I point out, if you go through a walk for me through Burbank, which is a media capital of the world in many ways, is pay attention to the billboards and the bus shelter ads because they tell you very much how the company's there, how Netflix, everybody else wants to signal themselves. Netflix, and I noticed with Netflix, Netflix advertises Netflix via its shows. Your Stranger Things poster. You see these things for these shows. You go, that show looks interesting. Oh, I got to get Netflix. When Disney Plus wanted to launch, you saw them doing multiple ads. The Mandalorian was their big, huge ad they were launching with. And then they would do the other ads that showed all the other content that would be on there, the Simpsons and stuff. So you see this thing, you go, oh, that content, I want that.
Yeah.
What's QB's? I want that. Like, oh, shoot. Like, no, that I'll subscribe for that. This looks like, you know, NBC's, you know, the failed pilot lineup.
I mean, aren't you excited to watch Survive? A show about a woman who's
trailer for it.
Over a big plane, or Most Dangerous Game, where they're gonna stab this guy who's standing on a girder.
No, that's I mean, and they've got like that's
Liam Hemsworth.
Yeah, it's a Hemsworth and a Christoph Waltz, right? Is he the other guy in Most Dangerous Game?
Why didn't they put their faces on it? I can't see that.
Well, they'll be in the
it's
trailer.
It's a man on a girder.
No, they're in the trailer. Look, I almost feel like we should knock this off right now because there's going to be like a full year of us dunking on Quibi. So let's go ahead and pack it in for now, and we'll see where it goes. A lot of this looks fine,
I guess.
What's your Mandalorian I gotta get it show
on Quibi
or Quibi?
Yeah. What's the thing that goes? Oh, I'll subscribe for that.
There is nothing. There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing on Quibi that I have to jump over the line for. For Hulu, enough people talked about Handmaid's Tale that I went to, I got the ad version, and then I wound up getting the other stuff. Like Netflix, obviously I had forever, but Disney Plus, it was like, hey, look, it's cultural coup, and it's Mandalorian. And even now, it's like, I mean, I haven't watched Disney Plus in a while. I might cancel Disney Plus until Mandalorian is back.
I canceled it.
It would need to be a franchise play, right? It's kind of what Netflix did when they started getting into original content for the streaming, which was let's go after
House of Cards.
Sorry? Well,
the Netflix.
And not just House of Cards, which was, you know, their first non-licensing thing, but even like Arrested Development, which was a franchise, you know, like they need a big windswell around a beloved thing. And what is it going to be?
House of Cards was let's see how we do original content. Let's spend a ton of money to do a thing that doesn't exist elsewhere that, you know, maybe got turned down at HBO, but whatever. And they put a ton of money and effort into it. And that was sort of their first like, hey, we're going to take this seriously, not just acquire other properties or do co-financing. I mean, all these are cool, but let's go in and go big and do let's be the American presenter for House of Cards. And like, and that was great because you saw the ads for that looked compelling. It looked really cool. And you know, they followed that up with some other great stuff here. Like, I don't know what they could do.
Ooh, I think I got it. I think I got it. So, and this is because I've been rewatching this, but you know what they could do is make a movie and chop it up into the quick bites for Community. Are we ready to finish the saga of Community? Is Community ready for its movie?
I think Yahoo learned the lesson on that one.
Well, Yahoo Screen had a lot of issues, but
and this super crystal clear platform seems ripe, right? There's certainly no confusion around Quibi.
Just saying, look, if there's money to throw around a bad what will probably all be a bad revival of something.
I mean, the only thing I think for that is they would probably want to spend money on the next. It seems like what they want to do is give Dan Harmon the blank check for the next Community. They are investing in talent.
Well, I think they made a deal with like Roiland and Harmon actually for a cartoon.
Yeah.
I would say go look at what properties like franchises are out there that are available. Like, I mean, 20th Century Fox, like, I guess, does Disney own Aliens now, too? Like that would be my kind of thing, is to go buy a named property, like a big, big, huge named property. Everybody knows his Community is still an obscure, its viewership was still small, but go for some big property. Like hypothetically, like let's say Aliens was available, you know, acquire Aliens and say, oh yeah, we're going to be doing an episodic Aliens TV show. Be like, oh, cool, that sounds interesting, you know. Just buy a name property. We know they did The Fugitive, but The Fugitive is not a brand name, you know. You'd have to remind people, like, oh, it's got this history, it was a TV show, and then it was a Harrison Ford movie, and then
it might as well be Peter Pan. It might as well be a common thing, like,
it's a trope. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, yeah, I can see that would be my advice, is like, go buy, make a deal for an existing property. It could be film property or something like that. You know, a Fast and the Furious, which they did the Netflix, I guess, TV series, but something like that. Anyhow.
Quibi, man. Oh. Quibi.
Yeah. Let's not. There's going to be plenty of meat on this bone for the next year.
Yep. All right. Picks.
Picks.
QB sets up Gloop World stop motion series from Rick and Morty's Justin Roiland and others. So
okay. Yeah, you know what? My pick is Community. It's on Hulu right now. I've been rewatching it. I just made my way through the infamous fourth season where Dan Harmon was not involved, and it's a wacky, weird, not great season, and I'm excited to see season 5 and 6 because the show is very good and it holds up. Community.
My pick is Democracy. Hey, everybody, go to your primaries and caucuses because I'll be there.
What's your next?
Vegas on the weekend. Saturday is the Nevada caucus, and then South Carolina after that. So I'll be in Columbia and Charleston, and then back to California for Super Tuesday, and then off to Florida for the Florida primary. So, Democracy, man, hell of an idea.
Here we go. Get you some, Andrew.
Sounds a little Greek to me.
Although I guess Google Forms. My pick will be Google Forms because that's apparently how they're gonna run the Nevada caucus. So I like Google Forms. I use it for surveys, and apparently it's good enough for the state Democratic Party of Nevada.
I will do a technical software pick. I have spent the last week building an app in Flutter. And Flutter, for those of you who don't know, is a framework that was created by Google, which allows you to make apps that work on both Android and iOS. And I like writing in Flutter more than I do in Swift, and I've never really played around Java enough to have an opinion about it. There are limitations, but things run natively, so things are super fast when they run in your app. And you know, I've had projects before where you're like, I could build the iPhone version, but I don't have a lot of Android people be upset with me. And I have been thrilled with this. There is a wonderful course on Udemy, which is available periodically for like $10 or $15, which shows you all about how to do Flutter. And it's about on like a 30-hour course. And, you know, I sat down. I'd done Flutter before, done some tutorials, but I sat down and did that whole thing. The teacher's Angela Yu, and right now the course is only $11, the complete 2020 Flutter development bootcamp with Dart. Dart is the language that it uses for that. We live in an incredible age of it's easy and cheap to learn anything you want to learn. It is just, it's out there. There's somebody who'll sell you a course for $12 on how to do it, and you do it, and then you know how to build things. And so I've been very happy with that. So that's my pick. Learning is my pick.
Nice.
Look at that.
It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.